Hello and welcome to People and Profit. I'm Charles Pellegrin, and this week we pay close attention to what's in our collective plates and what that means for the health of the global economy. As Paris hosts a Nutrition for Growth Summit this March, the figures couldn't be clearer in underlining the fact that healthy eating isn't just a developmental issue, it's an economic one. Every dollar invested in nutrition generates a return of $23, while malnutrition can cost up to tens of billions of dollars to the economy. Nevertheless, the topic remains neglected by the international community. What's missing? How do we generate the political will to fix this? Our guests will help us better understand. Joining us on set are Cleo Kawawaki. She is the Asian Development Bank's Director General for Sector Departments 2. That's the part of the multilateral development bank that deals with food, agriculture, and digital, among other sectors. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And also joining us is Joel Spicer, President and CEO of Nutrition International, a global nutrition organization that for the past 30 years has worked on improving the nutrition of people around the globe. Thanks, Charles, for being with us. I'll start with you, Joel, with just a question to sort of set the stage here a little bit. What are we talking about when we talk about improving nutrition, and how is that different from fighting hunger, for instance?
Thanks, Charles. So the issue is that hunger is really a signal from the body that tells you when it's time to eat. And when you eat, that signal goes away. So it doesn't really matter what you put in your belly. It could be unhealthy food or food that's not particularly nutritious. But the difference that nutrition makes is it's getting the right nutrition at the right time. And then we're talking about the quality of food and the vitamins and minerals that you take. And if you get it at the right time, which is particularly the first 1,000 days of a child's life and adolescence, those are the two times when we're growing the most, when our brain is developing the most, then you can protect that child's ability to have a strong immune system and be healthy for the rest of their lives, and have a fully developed brain and to learn, go on to get a good job, earn more money, pay more tax, and be more economically productive. So it's actually really a foundational and a fundamental issue in stable economic growth of countries as well.
Cleo, malnutrition is the cause of one in two deaths of children under five. Why is this still an issue as important today? We know that there's enough food worldwide for everyone to have a healthy diet. So where's it going wrong?
So when we look at the food and development, we have to look into the logistics as well and where the food is going. We know that malnutrition is prominent in farmers and even the fishermen. The fisher folks are, in some of the countries, are the poorest people in the world. They catch the fish, wonderful fish, but it's all sold, and they're eating out of tins. So there is that disparity, as well as a lot of food wastage where there is not the logistics infrastructure to carry the food to the right places. So we have to look at education, infrastructure, as well as the ability of the government to really look at their policies to make sure that the right food goes to the right place at the right time.
Yeah. You're a multilateral development bank, the Asian Development Bank is. How do you mobilize resources for that? What's the best way to mobilize resources from governments and other areas to that issue?
So as a multilateral development bank, ADB is the partner to the countries. So we have to look at the will of the countries on what they want to do, what they prioritize, to move the resources that we have inside the bank and from our partners to target it to the places that it's needed. So when we talk about nutrition, I mean, hunger, that's really easy for people to see. The governments prioritize that. But when they say something like nutrition, it's a little bit different because they don't see as a priority. But what we've seen is that if you have the right explanation and put it in terms of the growth, countries become much more interested and they prioritize these. For instance, like, we've left a lot of opportunities go unchallenged because we didn't put nutrition at the source of a lot of our projects. We're trying to fix that now to make sure that all of our investments have a nutrition in mind when we structure the projects so we can pick up those opportunities.
Joel, how do you feel about this issue of finding the money for these initiatives in this particular geopolitical landscape, with notably countries like the United States backing out of these international cooperation efforts, and even richer countries in Europe that are looking to spend more on their defense and their budgets and less on overseas assistance?
Yeah. Well, what we're seeing right now is a shift in thinking about malnutrition financing or financing for nutrition as being something funded by aid, and to being more about something where nutrition is financed based on investments. And I think there is a bit of a bitter pill here, because we're on the most important global moment for nutrition that happens once every 4 years, the Nutrition for Growth Summit. And donors have removed between $70 and $80 billion, that's traditional bilateral donors, from the table at the same time. So what that means is, millions of children are not going to get access to nutrition services that they need, and hundreds of thousands of children are going to die every year. That's the harsh reality. But in every crisis, there's opportunity, as they say. And so the opportunity piece is that we're also seeing the dialogue at country level elevate. It used to be captured by ministries of health, but now we're seeing more and more ministers of finance talking about nutrition and heads of government talking about nutrition. And they have to, because all of their investments are being underpowered when they're being made across a population that has heavy rates of malnutrition. Their investments in education don't get education outcomes if children are stunted, for example. And that harms the economic development of the whole place. So I would say the elevation of a country priority is one thing that makes me hopeful. But I would also say the entrance of multilateral development banks like the Asian Development Bank into the nutrition conversation is a reason for great optimism. If you look across all the multilateral development banks, they have a significant potential to sort of unlock the floodgates of financing in a way that could really move the needle on problems like anemia, stunting, wasting, and low birth weight. And those are the problems we're trying to solve. You know, if you think about the next 25 years, there are going to be 2 billion children born in the world. And if we allow the current rates of malnutrition to continue, one out of every four of them are going to be damaged in their body or in their mind by malnutrition. And that's 500 million children. So totally preventable for the price of a latte, basically. And it's something we've got to do, because malnutrition is a solvable problem.
You mentioned the role of multilateral banks like the Asian Development Bank. Asia is home to about 360 million people who are undernourished. Mm-hmm. Can you point us towards any of the initiatives that you've seen have the most impact in that region?
Yes. So the most impactful, we think, is, of course, the policy side. So if we have policies in agriculture, policies in health, policies in human capital development that's nutrition sensitive, we can have a lot more impact than just one project. So, for example, in our policy loans for agriculture, we put that those items that save on nutrition into the policies of the government. So in negotiation and with the knowledge project that's provided by partners like Nutrition International, so that we can do both the advocacy and then to actually have the results with the loans. And every country right now is suffering from the physical side. And of course, the grant side is suffering as well. So these types of instruments like policy loans really have an impact. Of course, we have the conditional transfer, cash transfer projects that also go on that we could put items in on nutrition, and that's worked very well, and we'll continue to do that. We have the logistic projects on the food logistics. So as I was saying before, the food gets to the places that needs to be at the right time in the right affordability. So we're trying to do all in sort of support, not just in health, not just in logistics, not just in urban, not just in, but everywhere in our projects, we see opportunities where we can support nutrition.
We mentioned the changing geopolitical landscape, and I have to ask this question. The United States is a major member of the Asian Development Bank and a major provider of capital to the bank. And you've worked with agencies like USAID before. Mm-hmm. How has the dismantling of USAID and other related agencies affected the way you operate?
So this is a great time to be creative and innovative and take the opportunities for private sector development to see, get our private sector partners to come in into this space or in any other space where there's lacking. And then we have instruments that we have a private sector arm that can lend for factories or lend for institutions that produce food, more nutritious food. We can advocate for that in those ways, as well as our SME partners. We think it's vitally important for the food sector in that SMEs get the help they need so they can scale up and do better on providing nutritious food.
SMEs, obviously small and medium enterprises, so smaller businesses for the viewers out there. Just to wrap up here, I'm going to point this question to both of you. There's a general aura and of an atmosphere of pessimism about these global efforts to fight for the sustainable goals set by the UN. How do you fight back against this pessimism? How do you stay hopeful in this fight for better nutrition?
I think we have to double down on hope here. And that means seizing the short-term opportunities, the medium and long-term ones. One of the short-term opportunities we see to keep nutrition high on the global political radar in a time of great disruption is the upcoming G7 meetings. So, for example, in 3 months' time, Canada's hosting a G7. They're traditionally a nutrition champion. But the year after that, in 26, it's going to be France's turn. So what's it going to take to get leaders of the G7 to keep nutrition high on the global priority agenda as well, just to keep that political momentum going? I think people will rally to that flag as well as they're rallying here.
Cleo?
So for us as a regional bank, the regional cooperation units like ASEAN, like CARIC or Central Asia, like South Asia, they have a lot of magnitude in putting the agendas forward. Therefore, we're going to press on those regional integration initiatives to bring those nutrition agenda forward and to keep on hoping and cooperating for a better future.
Cleo Kawawaki, you are a Director General of the Sectors Department 2 at the Asian Development Bank. Joel Spicer, your CEO and President of Nutrition International. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you to all of you watching. You can catch all of our previous episodes on the France 24 app or on the podcast platform of your choice. In the meantime, make sure you get your 5 fruit and veg every day and stay tuned to France 24.